Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's Tillage Podcast. I'm Siobhan Walsh, and we're recording on Thursday morning, the 9th of March 2023, for your reference on grain and weather reports later on. Coming up, I talk to the new editor of the Irish Farmers Journal, Jack Kennedy. I get his thoughts on tillage. We examine feed imports into Ireland in 2022, answer your queries, preview tillage in this week's paper, and as always, detail the grain market and weather reports. Now, as I look out the window on Thursday morning, there is a big blanket of snow across County Laois. We have heavy snow here this morning, although I was talking to Stephen, Stephen Robb, my colleague in Donegal, and he said there's no snow up north or in Dublin. So it seems to be down south that people are caught. There is a yellow weather warning in place today, and, you know, bad weather forecast. Our cold weather at least forecast for some of the weekends, so be careful out there. Better news, there is plenty of sowing being done or has been done over the past few days. I spoke to a lot of farmers this week. They're busy. They've been sowing beans, spreading fertilizer, and waiting on warmer temperatures to get out with plant growth regulator and herbicides. I was down in Wexford yesterday, and you know, there's a nice bit sown in parts and a nice bit ploughed, but still plenty to be sown. And look, I know the weather has turned, but it's still early March. So there's what I noticed as well along the main road there, the new motorway from Enniscorthy to Wexford. A lot of cover crops along that road, a lot sprayed off and waiting for the drill maybe. And look, snow will stop a lot of work, but hopefully too much rain or anything doesn't come in the next few days. Now, on this week's tillage pages, we look at feed imports, and look, this ties in with a theme across the paper this week, looking at the future of tillage in the country, and there is a big theme across the paper this week on that. So I'm just, look, you can check out the tillage pages, but the just to give you an idea on the feed imports. So they have risen in 2022, and maize took a big rise. So if you just take barley, was at 181,000 tonnes. So that's up about 10,000 tonnes on the year previous. Wheat is also up to 227,920. That's up from 175,000 in 2021. But maize is up 1.581. Is where it's at this year, and that was up from 1.22 million tonnes in 2021. So maize has returned to and I suppose wheat and barley to a certain extent, but at lower levels, has returned to those years of 2018 and 2019 when we had extreme weather events. And, you know, some of that is due to weather in 2022. You have to remember these figures now have two different feeding seasons in them because they run from January to December. So you have the winter of 21-22 in there and the current winter in there as well, and the feeding season during the summer where dry weather hit some parts of the countries. It also has, you know, the government, when the war broke out in Ukraine, the government's, you know, told the feed suppliers to stock up. So, you know, in years like that, we saw this happen with Brexit as well. You know, people got their stocks in order and got them into the country. So look, we go through the countries of origin on the paper there. You can have a look at that. Canada was the top supplier of maize, and Brazil followed shortly behind it. 173,336 tons from Ukraine. Look, these aren't exact figures. These are from the CSO. It's raw data, so it's subject to change. And look, positively then on barley and wheat imports, Northern Ireland and Great Britain are where we get most of those imports. So it's good. That's good to see. You know, if we have to import, it's good to see it coming across the border or across the water. And, you know, from similar farming situations to what we deal with. On a very positive note, while malt increased this year, you know, by just about 600 tons, malt imports have reduced significantly over the last few years. So there was just 5,300 ton of malt imported in 2022 compared to, that was at 4,700 last year, nearly 800. In 2020, that figure was 23,000. In 2019, look, 2019 is a different year. There was the steep collapsed in Bord malt and Athy, so there was more malt imported, and that probably played into 2020. 2018 saw 27,000 tons imported from malt, and look, 2018 was that dry year as well, so that might have played in somewhat in there, but good to see malt imports significantly down. Look, all the details of that are in the paper, and as I said, it ties into a stronger theme across the paper this week. There's another opinion piece there on tillage on 23. Editor Jack Kennedy is on page 2. And I know Declan O'Brien has a piece in News as well. So plenty of tillage across the paper to keep you entertained this week, as well as your normal grain trends and tillage management. As I said, this week there is a strong team across the paper looking at the future of tillage in this country, and writing upfront on what is quickly becoming a crisis in the tillage sector is newly appointed editor of the Irish Farmers Journal, Jack Kennedy. Thanks for joining us, Jack. Welcome to the podcast.
No problem, Siobhan. Good to be here.
Before we get into this week's main topic, you've been with the Journal quite a while, about 20 years, focus on dairy, before you were the deputy editor. But yeah, I think you've a bit of a graph for tillage, have you? You're keeping an eye on things around Tipperary.
I am, Siobhan, and always do, I suppose. I'm from South Tip, so there's plenty of tillage around South Tip, and I grew up in barley fields, trying to keep the crows out of the spring barley. But yeah, so look, I've been surrounded by it, and I mean, in North Tip now, there's maybe not as much of it in North Tip. We're in the hills here, like disadvantaged area, ANC, all that kind of ground. So yeah, there's not as much. But when I get down to the flatlands and see the good farms that you have, Siobhan, like I like to keep an eye on you. Like, yeah.
Yeah, the snow has fallen heavy on the flatlands here this morning, Jack. So work is quiet.
Okay, it is. But I mean, in fairness, Siobhan, no different to, I suppose, a lot of the other sectors. I mean, the spring has been relatively good, hasn't it, in terms of, you know, getting a little bit of ploughing done, etc. I see around here the farmers, and it's not just the tillage farmers, but it's been good in February.
Oh, absolutely. I was down in Wexford there yesterday and you know, a power of work done, and people probably being sensible, they held off for a while. You know, they planted a bit, planted what they felt they needed to do. And to say they were able to take a break, like, is, you know, it's a good thing to be able to do in early March, like.
Yeah, I mean, the weather plays, you know, it plays such an important role, Siobhan. Like, I mean, I know we're going to start maybe start talking about heavy stuff in terms of policy and how that goes. But I mean, weather for not alone for it's probably even more so for tillage farmers, in fairness. Like, I mean, it plays such an important role, and we've had a good run of it. So, I mean, we can talk about policy all we like, but the weather is such an important part of the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm sure tillage farmers had such a good year last year. And even, you know, while everything is going on at the minute between fertilizer prices and whatever else, it just life is made a lot easier when you're not under pressure to get out to the field, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one less stress, isn't it, Siobhan? Yeah. You know, I mean, it's one less pressure. It's one, and like, you know, I mean, we call all these like fertilizer prices a stress or whatever. And it is, of course, like, I mean, it is a pressure on costs, you know, but nevertheless, kind of when you keep it in perspective, when the weather is on your side, it can really kind of, as you say, soften a lot of those stresses. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Jack, we will move on to some of that heavier stuff this week. You've put out a bit of a call for action to try and stop the area decline. And you're writing there on page 2 and you said policy is driving tillage out and big dairy in. And that's a massive statement to make. But it's true, Jack. But yeah. I assume, go on, yeah.
Yeah, well, I suppose, Siobhan, I mean, just to kind of put it in context, it's something that I kind of see happening right now, you know. So, I think it's time to have a discussion on it, and it's time to have to be clear with everyone that, listen, this is happening, and not kind of come back in 5 years' time and say, God, where did all the tillage disappear, or why did it disappear, and why are we putting solar panels over thousands of acres, and why have we 5 dairy farms in a region where we had 20 before? And it's not to be down on big dairy or down on big solar farms either, but I mean, is there a kind of a place where we can be more strategic, I suppose, is my big question, Siobhan, in terms of like there's rooftops on a lot of farms across the south and east that maybe should be covered first as kind of a phase one piece. And then if we do need to move into a phase two, should we kind of look at kind of land that potentially maybe mightn't be used for tillage or dairy, because those farms need an income source as well, you know. So I think there's lots of questions. I don't have all the answers, Siobhan.
Yeah, it's coming to a point nearly every week there's planning for a solar farm and a lot of it in good parts of the country. But Jack, dairy is another side of it. But I assume these dairy farmers don't want to be going out and paying for extra land. Like, you know, this isn't really a choice. It's a choice to a certain extent. They could reduce their cow numbers, but they've built up these enterprises now, and a lot of them feel the only option is to go out and pay for this land. But
So I agree with you that they don't want to. Some of them don't want to, but some of them do, because they have the financial backing now. They have the power. They've had a good couple of years of milk price. Like, I mean, I remember when quotas were going in 2015, and there was a lot of people telling me, listen, I mean, this can't happen. Like, I mean, milk price will crash through the floor. But I mean, every year since then, it has probably gone up in price, you know, and culminated last year in huge, huge returns to dairy farmers, you know, but far more than they ever expected, you know. Now, of course, the whole cost piece has changed as well, and that's impacting on margins, you know, but a lot of them, Siobhan, are well-heeled in terms of that they have had great returns and they're looking for investments and growing their enterprises, and, you know, fair play to them if that's what they want to do. But I mean, there are a lot of choices as well in terms of they don't all have to do that. And there's a lot of enterprises now that are, I suppose, just barely covering the cost of production as well, which is never a good place to be in, whether it's dairy tillage or the pig game even, you know. I mean, you're working for nothing effectively, like, and maybe long term, yes, you might have a kind of a greater asset. But I mean, I think farmers have to kind of stand back from it and really question, you know, this taking on of land at big prices, whether it's buying or leasing, because it's definitely making them more vulnerable, short term at least, in terms of having to make repayments on some of this land. Like, yeah.
Yeah. You said growing their enterprises there, and some are continuing to grow their enterprise, but you know, the land that's being rented in a lot of cases, you know, it's not beside the home block, and the cows are still going to be on the home block. So this isn't scientific, you know, in the nitrates. This isn't going to impact on water quality, is it?
Well, as you say, the policy challenge is the nitrates directive there at the moment. And effectively, we know now that, listen, the derogation is going to bring it down to 220 for a lot of places, depending on water quality. But we know from the kind of, I suppose, inside from talking to the department and looking at the water quality results that the 220 is inevitable, to be honest with you, in the coming months. So dairy farmers, not alone is the banding impacting. The banding is the other piece there where, previously, every cow in the country was producing 85 kilos of organic nitrogen. Now that ranges depending on the milk yield. So if you have higher producing cows, you're going to produce more nitrogen, and you have to spread that over a greater area effectively. Like, that's what the current issue is. So there's two issues, the banding piece, and then there's the 220 coming down. So dairy farmers are anticipating this and saying, listen, we need to kind of just keep in the grazing game, Siobhan. To keep in the grazing game, you need to be kind of between that 200 to 250 in terms of, that's what makes it tick. That's what makes you're not going to get high yields in the grazing game, you know. Whereas if you locked up all your cows and put them into a shed, you can aim for your 10,000 litre per cow then, because you're bringing all your feed into your cow. Energy is not spent walking around the grass fields or walking in and out to milking, etc., and all that kind of thing. So you've it's a different game. It's more of a European space. But I mean, we're here in Ireland. We can grow grass, so it'd be great to try and keep the grazing game alive, but that's why the derogation is so important, and that's why farmers are trying to get the land so that they can stay in a kind of a grazing game production system. That's really what they're striving to do.
Yeah, Aidan Brennan is going into this on the dairy pages as well, and it's worth a read for tillage farmers too. I think he puts it in a good bit of context. But you continue on in that page too, and touching on what you said there, it's driving higher input and output models. So like, that's our key to sustainability. It's our green image. Like,
it is, and it's not, and it's more than an image, Siobhan. It's our brands really on a global scale. So like, when you think of Kerrygold, and like that's a particular unique type of a product in terms of you won't get Kerrygold, no matter how much they try to replicate it. You won't get it in the US, or you won't get it in a lot of parts of Europe, or you won't even get it in New Zealand, you know. So I mean, it really is our calling card. It's our unique, it's our piece of product, it's our IP, it's what allows kind of dairy get that little bit of a premium product in a commodity market, you know. And and we need that, because we're kind of an exporter of product out of Ireland, and we need it. Yeah, so the transition into a higher input, higher output system won't be good for, I'll say it won't be good for the environment, or it won't be good for dairy farmers in terms of their margins, etc., you know. So that's the challenge.
Yeah, and you mentioned quotas and the derogation there. Like, we saw the tillage area decline from 2014 to 2018 when quotas went. We're now seeing it decline again. You know, anecdotally, we don't have the figures, but all reports point that way. You know, if the derogation goes, and you know, we get down to that 220, this is going to continue, Jack.
Yeah, you would say that economics will win the day, and the dairy farmers will have the financial clout to get that land, and then whatever they do with it, whether they use it to grow feed or rear heifers or dairy beef stock, you know, that's what they'll do with it. They'll do something with it. Maybe potentially they'll work something with neighbours or whatever. But yeah, you would see it go in the same direction, and the pressure is still on, and will be on, as you say, the environment, and rightly so. But that pressure is still going to be there without a shadow of a doubt for the next couple of years. So you would see the piece going in that direction, yeah, definitely, in the short term.
And then, as all of this happens, then if tillage area declines, we've less Irish grain to feed those animals as well, which, you know, makes us less secure and also affects our sustainability. You're putting a call to action at the end of it, Jack, at the end of the article.
Yeah, it does, Siobhan, but just on the, and of course, like, we're dependent on imports of feed, as you have a nice piece this week kind of going through all that and where it's coming from. And, you know, so we have a dependency, no matter what, you know, how many tillage farmers are there. But as you say, to have a core, to have a kind of a relevant core of tillage farmers does definitely give the livestock sector and the monogastric sector, the pigs and poultry, like, I mean, they'll definitely keep it as long as they can in terms of a sector. So, yes, it definitely does build into, I suppose, as a sustainability piece, you know. But look, I mean, in terms of, I just feel there's a pieces happening here that are hugely significant in terms of the tillage piece, the solar piece, the dairy piece, all competing for the good land in the south and east predominantly. That's the challenge. And I think someone needs to kind of grab a hold of that. Someone needs to kind of steer that ship, because at the moment for me, it's happening kind of unchallenged, and it's inevitably there's going to be fallout on all sides, like, you know, and I think there's no need for it. I think if we have some kind of a concerted kind of a think tank on it, or some kind of a piece in terms of maybe certain rules and for placing of certain pieces of investment, I think it's important, you know. And it's too important, Siobhan. You see, farmers are so individual in terms of they're making decisions as individuals, and rightly so. They're all small little businesses, but there definitely needs to be some kind of someone within all the sectors needs to be thinking about this, because it all comes down to land use and land use, review in terms of what's going to happen or what's going to change. And I think we need to at least track the changes and have good numbers on it so that we can make some informed decisions rather than just sporadically everyone going about doing their own thing here, there and everywhere.
Yeah, it's certainly not an easy problem to solve, Jack, anyway, but definitely something, a group is needed, as you rightly say there, you know, a group is needed immediately to try and have some sort of quick fix in the meantime, and more permanent as we go on.
Yeah, and lastly, I'll leave you, Sean, but lastly, I think it's not just for the financial benefit of the tillage or dairy sector, right, you know, in terms of the economics of the business, but I think it's strategic for the environment and for the sustainability of all the sectors as well, not just the kind of the financial side of it. So it ticks a couple of the stools in terms of the sustainability angle.
Absolutely. Jack, thanks for coming on. Great to have you.
Super job. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Siobhan.
Thanks. Bye. Now we'll move on to grain prices. And this week, it's not looking good on grain markets. Prices are dropping there all the time. Just to give you an idea, so, you know, the Matif price for December, I suppose, started at nearly €290 per tonne at the start of this year. And then by last Friday, that figure was down to €272 a tonne. So it dropped significantly. It did come back up to €283 in that time. But it has been dropping all week. On Tuesday evening, it finished at €267. So that was down €5 on the Friday. And as I look this morning, it closed last night. It closed Wednesday night at €265 a tonne. So continued to drop last night. Maize is on a similar trend. So French maize is at 255 for next November, that is. So that's a tenner below the wheat price. That's never good to see. And oilseed rape is also falling as well. Look, I suppose wheat and barley, there's little demand in the market according to reports, you know, and to a certain extent that makes sense. You know, people did stock up, they have deer stock on their books at the minute and probably unwilling to go out and pay just yet until they really need it. You know, to a certain extent it's like fertilizer. At the minute, if you don't have your fertilizer stock on hand, you're buying hand to mouth, and I think that looks like what's happening in the grain trade at the minute. Just as I mentioned fertilizer, there's fertilizer prices on the news pages this week from Amy Ford, and well worth a look at them. So on oilseeds then, you know, I suppose oilseeds are being somewhat the drought in Argentina will help to underpin the oilseed price. It should secure it to a certain level, but at the minute Brazil's harvest, the soybean harvest in Brazil is progressing. I think it's about halfway through at the minute, and it's a massive crop, and that's having a big effect on the drop in oilseed prices most likely. Australia as well are also they've also estimated that their oilseed rape crop, or canola as they call it, is going to be up 1 million tonnes to 8.3 million tonnes from 7.3 last year. So look, something to keep an eye on, and we'll keep you informed. Grain Trends is at the back of the paper. Just to note then, Bort Malt made an offer of €300 per tonne to growers last week. They had I think it was Monday and Tuesday, they had to take that offer, depending on your merchant. So you had to take it in whatever merchant you were dealing with, you had to go in and sign for that offer. You could do it at up to 20% of your barley. I know there's a little bit of confusion around contracted tonnage, I think, for some growers, but you could do it on up to 20%. And as well, so this is separate to the, this is not subject to the 10 euro per ton energy charge. So over the next, from mid-April to mid-September, the average of the FOB Creole Planet price on a Wednesday of each week will be taken, and the average of that price will be taken as the harvest price by the middle of September, and that price will be subject to a 10 euro per ton energy or charge to cover drying and logistics costs, they said. So this 20% that you can fix now is not subject to that cost. And, you know, just to put things in perspective, you know, last week there was prices of 220 euro per ton put out for feed barley. So that malting price is 80 euro a ton over feed. So, you know, well worth a think about it. I know it's too late for some, but certainly it's a bit of positivity in the market when you're going to look at fertilizer prices and bringing fertilizer into your yard at those big prices. Now, before we go to the weather this week, I'm just going to give you an update on buffer zones. So last week we had a story in about the good agricultural environment condition. It's one of the rules in the new CAP strategic plan, and it said we had to have a grass buffer around on all the perimeter of cover crops if they were going to be grazed, or forage crops for grazing, as well as a 4 meter buffer beside a watercourse. So we published that in last week's paper, and the department have since come back to us and said that margin, that 3 meter margin around the parcel where a forage or catch crop that's going to be grazed is going to be planted, that margin does no longer have to be grass. It can be grass, it can be planted with grass, but it can also be made up of previous crop volunteers, but it can't be, the buffer cannot be the catch crop that is in the field or the forage crop that's in the field. And the extra meter beside the watercourse can also be made up of volunteers or grass, whichever you prefer. And just to note, if you have a watercourse and your stocking rate on the farm is over 170 kgs, then you need to fence that watercourse to 1.5 metres. So that's good news on that. Look, it was a big thing last week and looked like it could have had a serious effect on the grazing of catch crops on farms and integration between farms, but certainly a positive coming out of that now this week. Now, I have a reader query on those buffer zones. So I'll just read this out. So some of my headlands near streams and drains are a bit messy at the moment. That the remains of cover crops are just double from 2022. Can I cultivate them once this year to establish a wildflower margin, which will naturally mark the buffer zone going forward? So basically the farmer wants to tighten them up and then leave them. And, you know, when he says wildflower as well, he specifies here, he was going to put something like vetch and basilia into the mix around the field. It'd be a non-cereal margin to mark the 3 meter buffer zone. So basically you're allowed to cultivate that 3 meter strip if you're establishing grassland. It's good practice to have grass in that strip anyway. I would say to people, you know, plant that strip with grass and then maybe be able to top it or come in and manage it. And you know, it is 3 meters, so it might be easier to get in now than the 2 meter strip. So I would say in that case, I'd say you can put vetch and fasini in the mix, but there needs to be grass in the mix as well. So if you're going to cultivate it, you have to put grass back into that mix. But certainly a good idea to have the vetch and fasini in there, bringing diversity. And I'll clarify that with the department, but as long there has to be grass in the mix. And, you know, once there's grass in the mix, that buffer anyway is going to, over time, it's going to have different wildflowers in it that come into it naturally as well. But look, we'll clarify that with the department, but there has to be grass. If the buffer is cultivated, there has to be grass in that mix. Okay, so we'll move on to the weather forecast now. And I'm just looking at the Met Éireann forecast here in front of me. And, you know, you can all look out your windows anyway. If you're listening on Thursday, there might be snow beside you. So Friday, the forecast on Friday is for rain, sleet and snow in the east will linger for a time through the morning before clearing through. Most other places in the country will have a dry and mainly clear start. It'll be a cold day with sunny spells. Isolated showers of rain, sleet and snow will affect coastal areas of the north and west in the afternoon. Highest temperatures of 2 to 6 degrees. And then look, Friday night is going to be dodgy on the roads. Lowest temperatures of -4 to 1 degrees generally. Saturday, rain, sleet and snow will spread to all areas and will transition to mainly rain and sleet with further snow possible and confined to Ulster. Temperatures will stay down between 1 and 4 degrees and milder in the south at 7 to 10 degrees. And lowest temperatures then overnight look to be 1 to 5 degrees. Forecast on Sunday then, spells of rain across the country coming from the southwest. And they'll be heavy at times. Highest daytime temperatures on Sunday 10 to 13 degrees, but certainly look like the milder weather is in from Sunday, and temperature at night of 7 to 9 degrees. And then current indications for early next week is for continued unsettled conditions. There will be persistent rain or showers at times for most areas, clearing to dry and sunnier weather in between the wetter spells. So look, the outlook is mixed for the week ahead. But look, hard to complain at the minute. We're in early March and there's a lot of work done. So I don't think we'll start to panic yet, and hopefully it'll start to clear away. OK, so that draws the podcast to a close. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our guest, Jack, this week. Thanks to Claire and Jerome back at base. And of course, thanks for listeners. We love when listeners get in touch. And if you want to get in touch, if you have suggestions, feedback or queries for the podcast, I'm on swalsh@farmersjournal.ie. Until next week, stay safe and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.